We have Arthur Schwartz here as well on Robinhood Radio. Arthur joins us live on a Monday morning. We rebroadcast it during the weekend on the weekend. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning, and we have sun here, too. I haven't looked at the temperature, but I don't care.
That's right.
Pardon me?
As long as you see the sun.
I see the sun, and, you know, how cold could it be?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's May. In any case, I'm on a campaign, no segue here, I'm on a campaign to eat more fish,
yeah.
And not just tuna fish, although I do love canned tuna fish. Do you like canned tuna fish?
As long as it's a solid white albacore.
Oh, really?
I just
you want, in water. Does yours
in water? In water.
In water.
I like the solid white, and I used to eat it when I was a kid in that oil because it was in the oil. But now you can get it, of course, in water, and that's the tuna fish I like in a can.
Interesting. I have a can in the house because not so long ago I made a recipe that called for it, and I'm thinking. Trying to think what it was. I think it was, I just had a craving for this. You're going to laugh. It was for a tuna noodle casserole.
No, my God, please.
And it was a recipe from my old friend and mentor, Nika Hazelton, a woman who is not as remembered as she should be. And Nika wrote, I don't know, 20-something cookbooks. She was the editor overall for the Women's Day Encyclopedia, which was in its day, meaning the late 70s, a mid-70s, a really revolutionary encyclopedia, written by all the best food writers of the day, because Nika was friends with all of them, and said, okay, give me an essay on this, give me an essay on that. Anyway, back to all of a sudden, I had this craving or this tuna noodle casserole, but it had to be Nika's. And I'm pretty sure I followed it to the letter, and that's where I was eating that canned tuna. I eat a lot of tuna, but not necessarily of the kind you like. But I'm sort of thinking that doesn't really count. I should be eating more fresh fish. Now, the problem with getting fresh fish, now you have a fish guy who comes by in Sharon, right?
Yes, we do.
The fish truck. You probably get better fish from your fish truck than I can get most places in Brooklyn, which is, you know, like the fourth largest city in the country, and we're right on the ocean. So there's no excuse. But actually, I now have a source for very good, very fresh, local fish, and you're going to be shocked. It's Whole Foods.
Whole Foods. Oh, that's amazing.
Whole Foods. Yeah. Pardon me?
It doesn't shock me anymore, no.
Oh, well, you know, since Amazon took over, things have definitely improved, meaning become more accessible. The fish prices are less than they are at most fish markets where you're getting frozen product. You never even know if it's fresh or not because it's all cut up into little pieces. Here you get lots of whole fish. There's a man behind the counter who happily, it's his job and he likes it, will gut it and scale it for you. Otherwise, you can examine this fish inside and out on your own. It's actually in a big case in the front, filled with ice. And on any given day, there may be 3, 4, 5 kinds of whole fish, including locally caught and including some farmed fish. So everybody's loves branzino. By the way, singular is branzino. Plural is bronzini. So let's when you're doing one fish, let's call it with the O at the end. In any case, that's a farmed fish. Yes, it's from the Mediterranean, so it's farmed in the Mediterranean. I'm not sure that that's necessarily better than farmed somewhere else, but it's a farmed fish. And sometimes it tastes like a farmed fish, which means it doesn't taste like anything. But the other day, for $7 a pound, they had local, fresh, obviously, monkfish. Now, I live with somebody who likes monkfish better than all other fish, and it's there are good reasons. There are no bones in a monkfish tail, and that's what you're eating. I dare you to find a whole monkfish anywhere in, well, at least anywhere I've ever been in America. If Americans saw what a monkfish really looks like, they would never eat it. It's a monster. It's really sort of, it's very gross. And in fact, it's also called frogfish in Italian, for good reason. Now, I have in Italy found whole monkfish, big ones, and the tails of those can be a little tough. You've got to cook it, I think, moist cook it to make it tender. But the front of the fish makes excellent fish broth. So they do sell, and southern Italians do like their fish broth. So brodo, with a lot of brodetto, there's a lot of words for it. In any case, that's the front of the monkfish. I don't know what happens to them here. Now, the tails that I bought for $7 a pound were tiny. Not the smallest I've ever bought, but I bought 2 pounds, and I would say there were 8, 9 tails, so a quarter of a pound each. And that's enough for 2 pounds of fish is enough for 4 people. So at for $14, I was able to feed a luxurious fish meal. Well, adding other ingredients like a can of tomatoes, la la la, I'll get to that in a second. It's a very economical and very healthy meal. You got your lean protein, and I'm putting it in a tomato sauce, and that gives you some vitamins, of course. And cooked tomatoes are very healthy, actually more healthy, apparently, than raw tomatoes, although I like them both, and I eat them both. So anyway, this sort of stew that I'm making, well, it's more of a braise. And I'll tell you why. What makes it a braise is that you really do want to sear, so to speak, the monkfish before you add the sauce ingredients. I have, in fact, made a sauce, and I do this sometimes, make a sauce and then put fish into it. But in the case of monkfish, it gives off a lot of white protein when it first goes into the water, and it sort of makes the tomato sauce not less delicious, but it does make it less appealing looking. And if you heat up some oil in I use a deep skillet called a sauté pan. You don't have to have a deep skillet because this is with the cover, because you don't ever cover this. So any big skillet will work. Heat up a little olive oil, and if you like garlic, you add a couple of cloves of chopped garlic. If you just want a whiff of garlic, which is what I wanted yesterday, just crush a couple big cloves of garlic, put them with the heel of your hand, put them in the oil, and very, very slowly soften them in the oil, squishing them down into the oil from time to time. Don't let them brown, or at least don't let them brown much. Keep flipping over side to side. And then you can take the garlic out. This would be very Neapolitan. If you want to make it like more Sicilian or more Italian-American, I would add chopped garlic, or sliced garlic is good too. And just cook it until it's soft, and then take it. Well, if you're using, and then add your monkfish. The monkfish, if you use sliced or chopped garlic, the garlic won't darken once you add the monkfish. But do add it all at once. And I cut my tails, each one into 3 pieces, so they were a 2-inch length of monkfish. And of course, it tapers to one end. So you're going to get one end cooking quicker than the other end, but that's okay. Put it all in the pan, or mostly in the pan. I hope your pan's big enough to hold it in one layer. And just toss it around until the fish becomes opaque. That's all you need to do. You don't need to brown it. Just make it so that the fish is opaque. And then add your sauce ingredients. In my case, it was a can of peeled tomatoes, of Italian tomatoes, and I mashed them up with my potato masher in a bowl before I put them in. Salt, I used red pepper flakes, but not too much to make it really hot, just enough to season it a little bit. And in the end, I put in, not the end, but after cooking that a few minutes with the fish, I added 10 gaita olives. You could use kalamata olives, too, or any actually purple olive, pitted. I cut my little gaitas into quarters, threw them in, with a tablespoon of salted capers that I had soaked ahead of, you know, rinsed and then soaked for 15 minutes ahead of time, drained again. And that's it. And at the end, once the fish was cooked, and it took about 20-something minutes, like less than 25, more than 20, to become tender, and you know it's tender just by putting a fork into the biggest piece, and I added a small handful of chopped parsley. Boy, was that good. Now, there are other ways to season this. You could, for instance, if you were in Sardinia, you might have a little saffron in that sauce. If you were in certain parts of Sicily, you might have mint instead of parsley. You could add a little dried mint if you like. There's another way to make this, and it's in my Naples at Table book. So that's from more than 20 years ago, 25 years ago. I was cooking it this way. I use a base of, no, it was actually, I can tell you, it was 23 years ago because this recipe came from a calendar of the biggest fish distributor on the Amalfi Coast. And they supply all the elegant hotels on the Amalfi Coast with fish for their restaurants and dining rooms. So we know that this is a high-class company. So they have a calendar with recipes every month, and I've collected them. And I think this was from the 1997, maybe 96, maybe I got it in 96, a calendar. And it's interesting. They put brandy in this sauce, which I wouldn't think to do. I was almost tempted to do it yesterday, but then I thought better of it. But what I do is I in the book, Naples at Table, where I use a recipe from this calendar, you make a base with some, well, they use cognac. I use white wine or dry vermouth, if I don't have white wine open, dry vermouth with tomato paste, thinned out tomato paste, and cook that for a minute or two or three. And that's after you've seared the fish. So it's a more complicated recipe. But, in fact, it's not a bad idea, if you like this flavor, at the end, or even not at the end, when you're adding the tomatoes, add a little tomato paste, thinned out with, you could just be water. You don't have to use wine at all. You could just thin out a little tomato paste with a tablespoon of tomato paste, a heaping tablespoon, with at least a tablespoon of water. And it adds a, let's call it a base note to the sauce that's very appealing, I think. But I didn't do it that way because I wanted a fresher sauce. I wanted more voluminous sauce, too, because we were going to eat pasta. So you could serve this two ways. You could serve it like a Neapolitan ragu is served, meaning have the sauce on pasta as a first course, and then have the, in this case, fish, case of a meat ragu meat, as a second course with the vegetable. So, and of course a little bit of the sauce as well. So in this case, I would first of all really garnish it up with some chopped parsley if you're serving it as a fish course. And a good vegetable would be, well, I don't know if asparagus, which is my obsession, my fixation of the moment, because it's getting to be peak season, I'm eating a lot of asparagus. Asparagus would be good, but in fact, just a plain salad with the fish would be very good. And it could be a single leaf salad, like another fixation of the moment. Watercress would go very well with this. But it could also be a cooked vegetable. Spinach would be great with this. So that's, you know, it's really a meal made in a pot, except you have one more pot to boil water. And you could serve it that way, too. You could serve the fish on top of the pasta with the sauce, very homey style. Some families, they call this a piatto unico, a an only plate. So you only get one plate, but everything is in there. I would say that's a very American thing, more than an Italian thing, but Italian-American thing.
You know, when
everything
I was,
in one bowl.
You would love to come to. I went to Bermuda twice, actually twice, but the first time I was there, I had conch fritters and monkfish fritters. But what they also did, somebody told me to go to a restaurant at the far end of Bermuda, and I forget the name of it. They had a fish chowder, Arthur, and they asked you to eat it like they did, and that was to put a little sherry in it and dark rum.
Ooh,
and it
I would
was,
like that.
And it that trip to Bermuda, when I did that, stays in my mind for the conch fritters, the monkfish fritters.
Yeah, where did you go? Where, you know what? There's a famous place, right? Where did you go by ship?
Yes.
Yeah, so actually, I was just looking at a cruise itinerary. I mean, all the cruises that leave from Brooklyn go to Bermuda. Not I shouldn't say that, but a lot of cruises that go to that start in Brooklyn, which I always find very appealing. You know, I just take a cab to the ship.
Yeah, you get on.
Get on the ship. But the thing is, Bermuda, to me, was not interesting except for Marshall's experience, which I had too.
All right.
That was the best thing about Bermuda, except nobody told me to add rum and what was the other thing?
Sherry. And it was at a bar, a restaurant at the far end of Bermuda. I had a taxi cab driver for the whole 3 days I was there. When I got off the ship, I gave him like $75 a day just to take me around, and I had the best experience.
It's called a chauffeur.
Yeah, I had the best experience there. I was 420 pounds. He always saw me come off the boat. Big guy, let's go. And that was the best fish chowder I ever had in my life.
So the conch fritters, they
so
were fried,
So maybe I'll
right?
go to Bermuda.
Yeah.
Meantime, I found Nika Hazelton's recipe for tuna noodle casserole. And indeed, Marshall, it calls for 2 6-ounce cans of white meat tuna, packed in water, drained. So I'm sure that Nika did this to make it most appealing to her American audience. She was, in fact, Italian by birth, and her father was a diplomat, was German, and she considered herself, I know, a woman of the world. So, and she certainly knew her audience. So what's interesting about this tuna noodle casserole, now that I've looked at the recipe, is that the thing that I was skeptical about when I first read this, in her book, by the way, it comes from one of her books, her Nika Hazelton's pasta book, it's called, the little book, was that it only called for 4 ounces of egg noodles to serve 4 people. I mean, that's only 1 ounce of pasta per person. It doesn't seem like enough.
That's an appetizer.
But I made this very recently. I think I said that, which is why I have... Oh, the reason I have 1 can of white meat tuna in the closet here is because it was 3 for something. I'm remembering this now. So I bought 3. Anyway, I haven't used the... I should look and see if it is, in fact, still 6 ounce. You know, they've reduced the can size, but it doesn't matter. This is a really rich, wonderful recipe, but it's not like any American tuna noodle casserole. For instance, she uses Gruyere. Now, you should use good Swiss or French, France is called Comté, or Swiss Gruyere for this. And you basically make a bechamel, 3 tablespoons of butter, you melt, you blend in 3 tablespoons of flour, you add 2 cups of milk. You bring that to a simmer and let it cook for a minute or so, and then stir in your seasonings, which are, the cheese, 3/4 cup of shredded Gruyere, or as I said, the French version. I don't know of any American cheese that's going to give you the same flavor. However, if you're a cheddar person, you could make this into a cheddar recipe and just use 3/4 cup of cheddar cheese. It sort of doesn't matter what cheese you use, except it should be good cheese and a sort of flavorful cheese. And then I add 1/4 cup, well, this is of freshly grated Parmigiano Reggiano, a half teaspoon of salt, a quarter teaspoon of pepper, a big pinch or 1/8 teaspoon of nutmeg. I add a little bit more, probably. I'm generous with nutmeg. And that's it. Once the cheese is melted in, remove this from the heat, cover, set it aside, and now you'll make your tuna, the rest of this. You're going to break up the tuna into large pieces. Don't make it too small because it's two cans, for one thing. And it will eventually break up more than you want it to. Add your 4 ounces of already cooked noodles. Toss that gently with two forks. Pour on the sauce. Again, blend it together, lifting it up with forks and letting it drop down. That's the best way to do it. And then you put that into a very generously buttered 2-quart casserole. Now, I put a breadcrumb. Anika would have you put melted butter over breadcrumbs, but I prefer taking my half cup of breadcrumbs and mixing it with the 2 tablespoons of melted butter and sprinkling that, the buttered crumbs, over the top. This gets baked in a 350-degree oven for a half an hour or until the top browns, you know, nice and golden, and it's bubbly. You'll know when it's done. And, you know, let this cool a minute or two until the bubbles stop, but then serve it hot. It's sort of, you know what it reminds me of, except they didn't put tuna fish in, is it was a famous baked pasta dish that they served at Harry's Bar in Venice. I bet you they still have it. I'm sure there's a Harry's Bar in Manhattan. I think it's in the Sherry Netherland Hotel still. So, if you Jill, do you eat cooked tuna?
No.
Oh, I forgot. Oh, excuse me. I forgot one of the most important
raw tuna
ingredients.
What?
Peas. You want to put peas in?
Yeah, there you go.
You're exactly right. It's exactly the way my grandmother made it, with peas.
And peas, but, with peas.
But you know the funny
thing? I have a new way of prepping peas for a casserole like this, or actually for any dish where they're going to be exposed to heat again. And that is, I bring a small pot of water to the boil. I put in the frozen peas. In this case, you're going to put in a cup of peas. And pretty much as soon as it comes back to the boil, they're done. Drain it, and that's about it. And if you put those in here, it adds some green. It makes it a more classic American casserole.
My grandmother always kept the peas separate until it was on the table. And then you put the peas into the casserole when it's on your plate. That way, they did not get mushy.
Yeah, I don't want mushy peas either. Man. But they won't get mushy this way either. I guarantee.
You guys are just making me sick.
But I like your grandmother's attitude about this. I love your grandmother's. I mean, and the fact is, it looks nice on the plate too, and you can sort of mix it. And also, I hate to say this, but I have a family. Not everybody likes peas.
Uh huh. And I just
and
have to.
They're always picking out the peas.
Yeah, and I have
my mother.
My
picked out the peas.
Uh huh. And Marshall is just describing this, and I've got the most god awful look on my face. Yeah, so
she's
why? Because you hate peas.
That recipe is just not in my
peas and canned tuna fish. Jill just
I
about
love
dead
canned
here.
Tuna fish. Well, I just
is,
don't like
know,
it
this
in
is all,
pasta
because I'm trying to eat more fresh fish. Yeah. But it just came up, and I thought, well, since it just came up, and this is the best tuna noodle casserole ever.
It was
because it's full of creamy cheese.
there was always a big fight in my house over canned tuna. My mother, my grandmother, and I liked the solid white in water. Everybody else liked the dark tuna in oil.
In this recipe, I understand why it's white tuna in water. Because you're adding so much richness. And I don't know. But you know what, Jill? Would this be better if we put in diced ham?
No.
Oh, okay.
Nothing would be better.
Oh, okay. Chicken? How about diced leftover chicken?
No way. She's,
no need.
She's never going to go for this. Never.
Yep.
What part of it doesn't she like?
The
everything.
Fact that everything.
Everything.
The whole idea
don't
of
don't like creamy cheese?
Ugh.
No, it's a lost cause. What can I tell you?
Exactly.
You
know what? I don't like the combination. Anything naked, I will eat happily.
I never understood. I love tuna casserole like that, but when you go out to a restaurant and the first time I tried a grilled tuna sandwich, oh, I just about got sick. I couldn't stand it.
No. You know, eating tuna outside your own home is dangerous. Like pasta, I would never leave my house for canned tuna. I would never leave my house for pasta. I mean, sometimes they eat it out, but not in an Italian restaurant, usually.
I'm
very picky about that. By the way, yesterday when I made the delicious monkfish, Bob's go-to pasta is always spaghetti, and I should have put it on bucatini or something like that, but I ended up putting it on something I wanted to use up. I don't even know what they call it, but it's a kind of fusilli with a hole in it, short. And it was the Rumo brand, which I'm loving lately. It has a very big wheat flavor, Rumo. It wasn't the right pasta for this. I think the right pasta for the monkfish would have been maybe rigatoni or... some large tubular pasta or spaghetti. And then it would be like meatballs and spaghetti. Mm-hmm. The sauce would integrate well, but the meatballs would sit on top. In this case, the fish would sit on top. But piatto unico, we don't care.
Okay. Well, we got about 2 minutes left here.
We do?
Yeah.
My clock says it's exactly 8.
I know, but we started about 2 minutes late, so...
So I get an extra 2 minutes.
You get an extra 2 minutes. I try to keep your show at the same length, no matter when it starts.
And it's just that sometimes 2 minutes aren't really 2 minutes.
Yeah, I know.
Other than that, it works really, really well.
Well, we just wasted another minute.
That's exactly right.
So
that's
we can actually wrap it up now.
We could. We could say, let's see, any holidays coming up? Mother's Day.
Mother's Day.
Mother's Day after Thanksgiving, or maybe it's ahead of Thanksgiving.
It is
the busiest restaurant day.
Sunday is going to be a big brunch day, no matter where you go.
So stay home on Sunday.
No, it really is.
Cook for mom.
That's it.
How about that? Cook for mom. Remember breakfast and
bed
for mom?
Yeah, you know, on Father's Day, fathers get to cook for mom too. So
fair.
I don't know what that's about, but you know. On Mother's Day, the mothers get served, and on Father's Day, the mothers get served.
Yeah.
All right.
Take care.
Good luck.
Have a good week, everyone.
Bye-bye. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio. As we said, you can hear Arthur live on air, also rebroadcast during the week, during the noontime hour, and also on the weekends as well. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef with 2 beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.